Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. It is Tuesday, March 15th. The time is 9:13 a.m. We're in Juneau, Alaska in room 532. Present at the table, Senator Olson. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chairman.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
Senator Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Good morning.
And myself, Senator Anna McKinnon. We should be joined shortly by Co-Chairman Kelly and Vice Chairman Machicki, who are on other state business at this time. On today's agenda is SB 145, Daycare Assistance and Child Care Grants, and SB 147, Senior Benefit Program Eligibility, as well as a conversation for the committee only on SB 1, the regulation of smoking. Is there anything else to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing none, SB 145, Daycare Assistance and Child Grant, and providing for an effective date is before the committee. If I could ask Sean O'Brien, the Director of the Division of Public Assistance, to come forward and introduce the bill. We have online, I believe, and available for a conversation, Janice Braden from the Child Care Assistance Program. Is Monica Windham in the audience, and she's available for questions also. Mr. O'Brien, if you would introduce yourself for the record and please present SB 145 to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sean O'Brien. I'm the Director for the State Division of Public Assistance under the Department of Health and Social Services. Appreciate the opportunity to come forward and introduce Senate Bill 145. This particular bill is basically a very short and sweet amendment, or involves a change or an amendment to allow our child care program to collect funds through PFD garnishment where current voluntary methods are not effective. Currently, that's how we collect on those kinds of overpayments or mispayments. And so it would allow us to move forward as basically is set up with the rest of the Division of Public Assistance and be consistent through our process of recollecting funds, overpayments or misspent funds. So brings us an alignment for the process of recouping overpayments and misspent funds. And also, it supports federal compliance with a child care development program, which does require that we go after fraudulent and improper payments. And again, the major difference between this and practice of what we have been doing and what we would like to do is if volunteer recoupment doesn't work, then it does allow us to move forward with PFD garnishment. And that's my summary. I'm happy to answer any questions. And Janice is on the line from the program as well, and Monica. So hopefully between the three of us, we can answer whatever questions you might have.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. O'Brien, as you look at the idea of people that are out there looking at permanent fund dividend payments that are there, what are the programs that are out there that goes ahead and garnishes PFD dividends?
I might ask for a reply on that one, Monica, if the chair, Madam Chair doesn't mind if Monica would address that.
For the record, my name is Monica Windham. I'm the Chief of Policy and Program Development for the Division of Public Assistance. Our other programs that garnish PFD are food stamps, adult public assistance, TANF, general relief assistance. Basically, all of our programs can garnish PFD other than senior benefits and child care.
If I could continue, Madam Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Actually, I was looking for entities outside of the Department of Health and Social Services to see who else is garnishing them. And my real question has to do with where in line would daycare be in that whole system of, or list of entitlements that people are trying to get?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, I don't have that information. I'm working on getting it. I have the claims unit is looking into that for me right now. I believe the court system, child support.
Corrections.
I can have that information to you later today.
Thank you. If you could provide that to the chairman, we'll make sure that the committee members have it as a question. The prioritization of how distribution of permanent funds would be distributed inside of the state, as I understand it, Senator Olson?
That's correct, Madam Chairman. No further questions.
Any other questions from committee members? I have a follow-up question. It appears there may be some retroactivity ability in this bill. Is that the case? I see an effective date of July 1st, 2016, but when I read on page 2, line 2, overpayments occur before, on, or after July 2016. That sounds like it's retroactive and that we'll be able to collect it in the next permanent fund dividend cycle.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think I can address that question. So, yes, the bill itself indicates in Section 3, the last sentence of the bill, this act takes effect July 1st, 2016. The current program is set up and is allowed to go back 1 year, and so it does allow us, this particular bill would allow us to collect on this year's PFD as a garnishment.
Thank you. Other questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, thank you for the bill introduction. What I'd like to do is open the public hearing on Senate Bill number 145, an act relating to the recovery of overpayments of daycare assistance and child care grants and providing for an effective date. I have no people online wishing to testify, only available for questions. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on Senate Bill 145? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. We'll set this bill aside. The next bill before the committee is SB 147, Senior Benefit Program Eligibility. Mr. O'Brien, thank you for visiting Senate Finance today. Welcome, Senator Kelly. Senator Kelly, we're on SB 147. We do have a CS before the body, the CS for Senate Bill 147 from the HES Department. It's version W before the body.
You need a motion?
No, we're good. Mr. O'Brien, could you introduce SB 147, the CS, to the Senate Finance Committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, my name is Sean O'Brien. I'm the Director for the State Division of Public Assistance under the Department of Health and Social Services. Appreciate the opportunity to introduce Senate Bill 147. Senate Bill 147 basically makes one change to the existing law and would be our process, which is to bring in compliance or bring in consistency might be a better way of saying that. the aspect that a person must be a U.S. citizen, pardon me, a U.S. citizen or a qualified alien and status so that in order to be eligible for their senior benefit program as stated in lines 9 and 10 of the first page. That's basically the difference. That would allow us to, again, be more consistent and, quite frankly, catch up with the intent of the program and legislation when it was originally drafted. It appears, looking back, that really probably should have been in the language in the first place, and it wasn't. So part of this is sort of a catch-up, if you will, to what probably should have been, and making us consistent. More consistent across our programs so that we're including the similar qualifications. That's about all I have. Yeah.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Sir, do you have an idea of how many qualified aliens enter Alaska every year?
How many qualified aliens we have?
Enter Alaska on an annual basis?
Let me see. Hold on just a second. Right, I did bring some of that data with us. I do know that we had, hold on just a second here.
At ease. We're back on the record. Mr. O'Brien.
Yeah, through Madam Chair, Senator Bishop, we actually don't have that information. What we do have is we know we currently have 16 individuals in this program who don't appear to meet the citizenship requirements as stated in this bill. 12 of those 16 don't meet the five-year waiting period. Three are non-immigrants and one is illegal, and I understand that's not specifically your question. I don't know if we have that data available. We could certainly check.
Yep. Thank you.
Mr. Bishop?
Thank you.
The Senate will wait to hear from you on that. We might want to check with the permanent fund dividend. As I understand it, I guess my question was going to be, is this a similar requirement to the PFD for eligibility?
What's your answer?
For the record, my name is Monica Windham, with the Chief of Policy and Program Development with the Division of Public Assistance. Most of our programs have this requirement already, if I understand what you're asking. So we only need to add this to senior benefits.
Ms. Windham, if you could get back to us and let us know if it's similar to the PFD requirements also. It's a standardized, what I'm trying to get to, is it a standardized requirement for eligibility to establish residency or citizenship in the United States?
I apologize, I misunderstood your question. They do have the same citizenship requirement that we do and residency requirement.
Thank you. Is there any further questions from committee members? Again, I would note the applicability on page 2 and just ask, are you going to retroactively go back then and qualify the 16 members that you indicated as qualified for the program based on this bill being passed?
If this bill were to pass, we would have to go in and close those 16 cases because they wouldn't qualify if this bill passed. Right now, they are receiving benefits.
How are they receiving benefits if they aren't a U.S. citizen?
When the original bill was passed creating the senior benefits program, there was no citizenship requirement written into the bill.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess it's quite troubling to me to realize that there are people that aren't even U.S. citizens that are receiving public assistance. Obviously, if they're not U.S. citizens, they can't vote. And so, how many other programs are there under the Department of Health and Social Services that allow non-citizens to receive public assistance?
There are none, Senator Olson.
This is the only one?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any further questions on understanding the CS for Senate Bill number 147? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to open the public hearing on the CS for Senate Bill number 147, an act relating to eligibility requirements of Alaska Senior Benefit Payment Program. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on Senate Bill 147? Is there anyone online? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed on SB 147. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. We are The public hearing was closed, and we are holding SB 147. As I stated earlier, SB 1, the regulation of smoking, is back before the body. We were closing out the public hearing yesterday, and we didn't have an opportunity as a committee to discuss the bill and any direction that you might want to provide me as we work with the sponsor to produce a finance CS. There were several issues that Mr. Kopp raised yesterday that he thought needed to be addressed, and I believe the major one was moving from one department to another as far as regulation goes. But is there any general comments from the sectional? We certainly can invite Mr. Kopp to the table. Senator Machicki should be joining us shortly. Mr. Kopp, please join us at the microphone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Machicki.
Mr. Kopp, I know that you've been in touch with my staff, Aaron Schein, to talk about several pieces of this legislation that could be changed in a CS considered by the committee or amendments specifically. Do you have those to highlight for us, or more important to me at this particular point in time is the subcommittee's feedback on the bill so that I have a general understanding of where the committee is interested in going?
Madam Chair, as to your first question, some amendments to highlight. The main thing that the bill sponsor would like to do is to put the tobacco education and compliance program back in the Department of Health and Social Services. They are the agency that has been doing this historically. The statute that this bill amends did have it under DEC, but they really don't do it, and they really don't like it. And HESS has it in statute under 4429 that we read yesterday. It is one of their statutory duties. They're comfortable continuing on with it there, and that is where we feel it is most properly housed. Also, it takes away the kind of the whole idea of a heavy-handed Big Brother law enforcement approach, but more in the tobacco compliance program approach. And I do have Joe Darnell with the program standing by that he can talk about how they do enforce that. So that's the biggest one, Madam Chair. Another amendment would be to make it clear that we are exempting residences that are being used by the owners, and they're in their last stages of life, and they need to smoke, they need home care, they are smokers. We are not saying that you can't smoke in your own home, and the amendment would basically, if you look at page 2 of the current bill, version S, on line 12, sentence number 7 there, it would just say, in a building or residence that is the site of a business at which the care of adults is provided on a fee-for-service basis. So we would be clarifying that smoking is only prohibited if your residence is a site of a business at which that care is being provided. Certainly not if you're in your own home and someone happens to be taking care of you. That got brought to our attention by the state long-term care ombudsman and hospice organizations, things like that. Another amendment, Madam Chair, also on page 2 of this bill, line 22, editing out entirely the distance qualifier where it says 50 feet of an entrance to a healthcare facility. If we remove that, line 25 would apply where it says 20 feet of an entrance to a place where smoking is otherwise prohibited, which healthcare facilities are already prohibited under line 9 above in section B. So it's duplicative, and also by deleting the 50-foot distance, it would make it easier for people in nursing homes or long-term care to not have to be wheeled 50 feet out into a snowstorm or rainy weather, so to speak, but closer to an entrance. And staff at these facilities have said that would be helpful to a number of patients that are smokers to not have the 50-foot. So we would recommend striking that. Going on over into page 4 of the bill, where it says notice of prohibition on line 15, this is where businesses are required to have their smoking prohibited by law signs. An amendment that got brought to us by the Department of Transportation, if you look at line 19, Madam Chair, right on the second requirement where it says that the signs that need to be conspicuously displayed include, and go into line 2 there, or line 19, section 2, includes the international symbol for no smoking or the words no puffing. We would recommend inserting a semicolon after the words no smoking, semicolon, or, and then put a new section 3, includes the words no puffing, with a pictorial representation of a horn puffin or a tufted puffin. That basically would bring in a whole slew of signs that they already have printed and make them fine under the bill, and it would make it so there's just not a lot of having to produce more signs. We've encouraged them to use a graphic that you can download off the internet and put in a cellophane sleeve and not have a focus be made on hard metal expenses, especially since most of these are posted on doorways and can be posted from the inside facing out.
Mr. Koff, on the no puffing sign, while I know that there are winners for the stupidest criminals and the, you know, we see these awards all the time, I'm not sure that inserting no puffing with a puffin won't be the most unique statute in America. And by that, without tongue-in-cheek, many people have all kinds of ways that they describe no smoking beside a puffin, even though a puffin is unique to Alaska. Is there some other language that we can use if someone is trying to depict? Because what I'm afraid is, since we've called out the no puffin because it's an Alaska bird, that there are other things in Alaska that other businesses use that might be similar to that. Is there a way to describe that without getting to the bird?
Madam Chair, certainly. Also, I would just point out that line 18 is just the smoking prohibited by law, which is a standard prohibition. So that sign would be permitted. Line 2 as amended would end, includes the international symbol for no smoking, semicolon, and that is just a cigarette with a circle around it and a red bar through it.
Did someone testify on the puffin bird in the committee before us, or?
No, I think that's a piece of Alaskana that just worked its way into the bill. It was, I'll probably, subconscious on everybody's part.
Yeah. The committee wants to leave it there. I'm sure we can get an award for something for that one. Or at least a mention. Senator Dunleavy.
To comment a question. Sometimes I'm not sure how you do your job with a straight face, Senator. Just a question on some of the prohibitions. Are we there yet?
Mr. Kopp, are we ready for the prohibitions yet, or where are you?
You were just asking me about some proposed changes to the bill, Madam Chair. We appreciated the previous committee chair lowered the fine to $50 from $100. We think that's a proper lowering of the fine. We do want to keep this civil in nature and not encourage law enforcement intervention. So we would prefer to go back to the original bill draft, which allowed the commissioner of Hess to partner with another agency to enforce it, which they do on other things already, like with a spice prevention program. Hess partners with Department of Public Safety in their prevention, education, and outreach with that. And we feel, again, this is better suited for Hess's tobacco compliance prevention program. Previous bill draft brought in law enforcement as being able to establish this through a citation as far as enforce it. And we want to emphasize the tobacco compliance program, which is largely voluntary, rather than getting the judiciary system involved. That pretty much summarizes it, Madam Chair. We do need to amend the effective date of the bill, and that is largely it.
Okay. Hey, Senator Dunleavy, prohibitions. Can you give us to point us to a page that you're on?
It's general.
Okay.
And maybe Mr. Kopp can help with that. I think yesterday when I asked the question of fishing vessels, we just need clarification. I think we defaulted to like sports fishing vessels where they're on the deck fishing.
Page 1 and page 2. Marine vessels is on page 2, line 20.
So processors that are enclosed, let's say, are they exempted from the smoking ban?
No, there are, through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, those are shore-based fisheries vessels in enclosed working environments.
So they would fall under the smoking ban?
Right.
Okay. Next question is, if you have a mom-and-pop accounting business in a residence that clients will come to, but the mom-and-pop smoke, is there a prohibition on smoking in that place of business?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, at this time there is. That would qualify as an office that would also be a workplace.
So that would be that residence, which would be a workplace, would be banned in terms of smoking if the two workers are smokers and it's a mom and pop outfit. It would be banned under this currently.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As you look at state law, state waters, and those kind of things, what happens if a vessel is outside of the state waters out there? Are they exempt from this ban?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Olson, that's a good question, sir. Right, state law would apply to state waters, and then once you get beyond that, it would be, I think that the Coast Guard, federal, would take us out to a much greater distance, but state law is, I think it's within 2 miles. Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Bishop thought it might be three miles.
Yeah.
It is 3 miles.
Got some other heads shaking yes. I'm not.
3 miles.
Any other questions on SB 1? Senator Briefides. We're back on the record. Additional questions? Senator Dunleavy, just trying to get it on the record.
I know, that's good. Small guiding business in which the individual owns their airplane and they're shuttling one hunter out at a time or two hunters out at a time, and the hunter's a smoker. Is that an enclosed, considered enclosed, and therefore prohibited in some section I can't see in here?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, so I would need to probably defer to legal, because if it was covered by this bill, it would be a vehicle used for public transportation on page 1, line 8 and 9, but I'm not sure that qualifies as public transportation.
Or Mr. Kopp, on page 2, line 10, a vehicle that is a place of employment has a prohibited enclosed area. So it would be, as far as I read it, that would be prohibited. It's a vehicle that is a place
yes.
of employment.
I think that would be covered, but I would need to check. I could get a definitive answer for you, Senator Dunleavy.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kopp, on page 2, line 7, I mean, line 12, B7, I highlighted it might be a possible amendment coming forward.
Yes, sure, yes, Senator Dunleavy. Mm-hmm.
Senator Bishop.
Bishop.
Bishop, I'm sorry. I would look right through.
We've got it. Senator Bishop.
So is that health care provider that's there in that residence that might be doing some assistance for that in-home care? Is that what you're thinking, that by making this amendment, this would, there's going to be, is that health care provider going to be in the residence at that time that they're smoking?
That is the, through the chair, Senator Bishop, that would be the personal care assistant's choice whether or not to step outside while that person was smoking. But what the amendment would do is very specifically clarify that if that residence was not a business being used to provide adult daycare, then the owners can smoke away. We are trying to get at the situation where you have a homeowner that does have transient care come through carrying them at different times of the day, and they're also a smoker, being able to do that in their own home, which the amendment would allow that. Right now, it can be read that unless you clarify that you're only talking about businesses, that it could prohibit that, and we don't want to do that. We want to allow smokers to smoke in their own home.
Senator Hoffman. Senator Bishop.
Sorry, follow-up. Okay, I just want to get it clear, but that personal care attendant, is that somebody's employee or they're doing their own contract?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, most personal care attendants are part of care groups rather than, but there are certainly a number of single entities that maybe even personal care attendants to their own parents. But most of them employed in the state are through larger providers.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are bed and breakfast exempt or covered under this legislation?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I would have to look at that. They are a place of business.
And where is that stated?
On line, page 2, line 8, they start talking about hotel and motels, so we haven't been explicit with bed and breakfast as another form of rental.
Madam Chair, so on line 6, if a bed and breakfast was defined as a place of employment, it could be considered a prohibition. Thank you, Senator Lyman, for bringing that up to our attention.
Any other questions?
Senator Hoffman, I'm sorry.
Well.
Senator Lyman. Yeah, that was.
Any other questions? With that, we'll set SB 1 aside. Is there any other business to come before the body? With that, on Wednesday, March 16th at 9 a.m., we'll be taking up SB 69, Chiropractic, the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, SB 124, the Extended Sunset on the Alaska Commission on Aging, and SB 196, Power Cost Equalization Fund. Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, was that for Thursday, did you say, or Wednesday?
Wednesday.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Thank you.
On Thursday, we'll start our Wednesday afternoon, we'll start a walkthrough of the enterprise agencies, that's my terminology, Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, Alaska Energy Authority, and we'll continue that for the rest of the week in the afternoons. Senator Machicki.
Okay, Madam Chair, I apologize for not being here. I was scheduled to talk about our ferry reductions with Southeast Conference this morning for the last couple of weeks, and apologize missing the hearing this morning.
Senator Machicki, we let everyone know that you were on state business and to join us shortly. We just moved a little faster today. With that, we're adjourned.